Flourishing Futures, Nourishing Biodiversity Now. Initiative was created by the young people of the Brahma Kumaris. We had 16 events in 12 countries where over 400 youth joined virtually and over 5,000 watched live on YouTube and Facebook.
Hello everyone. A very, very warm welcome to each and everyone that is joining us today in this beautiful opportunity of life to celebrate together the World Environment Day 2020. So happy day to you all. My name is Maria Paula Cervera. I am here with you today from Colombia, our very full biodiverse country of South America, and this year's host of WET 2020 about biodiversity. So today we are going to explore a very, very colorful topic, and that is flourishing futures, nurturing biodiversity now, as an initiative of Brahma Kumaris Youth. In a moment, we are going to go further in this aspect. So let me give now a very hearty welcome to our speakers. So first, we're going to have Martin Frick. So welcome, Martin. He is the Senior Director, Policy and Program Coordination of the UNFCCC. We have Jyoti Martor Philip. She is the Director, Implementation Support Division, UN Convention on Biological Diversity. We have Vicky Janti. She is the Director, Brahma Kumaris, Europe and Middle East. And she is also the head of the BK delegation to the UN Climate Change Conferences. We have today Teresa Oberhauser. She is the focal point of the UNEP MGCY, that is Major Group for Children and Youth. So welcome everyone. But before we start with our speakers, we want to have you to enjoy this little game. So please choose, and according to these flourishing futures, we want you to choose one specific aspect of nature. It can be flora or fauna that you identify with. How does it relate to your personality? And we are also going to hear the answers from our speakers. How does it relate to you, to your personality? For example, I am as strong as an oak tree, or as bright as the sun. So let us have a moment to think, each one, and maybe we can hear from our panelists today what maybe they have chosen. It can be flora or fauna.
Fast as a cheetah. Thank you.
Oh, great. Thank you. Fast as a cheetah. Great. Hello, Martin. Yes, go ahead,
yes,
please.
To your question, Maria Paula. An animal that I always loved for many reasons is the bee. And if I look out of my window, I'm looking at a cherry tree. And, you know, I've seen this cherry tree in bloom. I see now the cherries there being stolen by the birds in the park. And that would not have happened without the bees. So professionally speaking, a big thing that you can do if you connect with many different groups is sort of acting as a pollinator, right? And try to bring transport information and inspiration and energy from one place to another. And this is what fascinates me. And this is, you know, what in a good day in this job, I'm allowed to do. So that is from my end. Thank you.
For me, it is the snake indeed. And I'm coming from a country where we don't have snakes, and I'm terrified of snakes, I have to say. But it also shows the flexibility that we often need in our work as environmental advocates to actually adapt. And there, I think the snake is a very good example.
Great. Thank you. It's amazing how we can connect with every little thing in nature, right?
Thank you. I'm going to choose the bull because I'm a Taurus, and that's not why I'm choosing it, though. But it just struck me that if we're thinking about the future, then the bull can be called stubborn and obstinate. But on the other side, the bull also has a quality of determination. And I think that at this moment of time in history, we're going through a very, very critical period, and it's all of us being determined together and holding that vision of the future that's going to be able to make the push forward and make that future become a reality. And so I think that the bull is a good sign for me to think about.
So, Teresa, welcome. Welcome to this wonderful space where we can share about flourishing futures, and maybe we can get some good wisdom from your experience. So a very warm welcome to Teresa.
First of all, thank you very much for inviting me for this great event. I feel really honored, really great to be here. And I'm really grateful to get the chance to share some of my perspectives, which are of course purely personal and from my own experience. And I'm sure there are many people in this room that are extremely active youth advocates or advocates, not just youth. So in that sense, this is just a tiny glimpse. I started at the age of 9 or something in a group of children collecting waste in rivers and in forests. And if I look at the members of United Nations Environmental Programme, Major Group for Children and Youth, today I see that there are so many young people who are actually active at a way earlier age and that are really, really, really great. Just to give you a little bit of an insight as to what we do there, United Nations Environmental Programme Major Group for Children and Youth is like the official engagement platform for children and youth towards United Nations Environmental Programme and in general environmental governance. And I think if we look at the struggle of nature conservation, of biodiversity and of climate issues, we often tend to put all our efforts in there and all our strengths and everything we have. But what we often, I think, forget is that it is not just a short sprint, sadly. I mean, looking at the IPCC reports, we know we probably have about 8 to 12 years to turn the situation on our planet around. And I mean, this is linked to climate, but I mean, climate very much impacts flora and fauna and also how species are able to live on. So I think in that sense, I really like to think of the idea of activism, of environment and biodiversity activism, to be more like a marathon than like a sprint. And I think, I don't know how many of you have had the chance to prepare for bigger sports things like a marathon or climbing a mountain or those kind of activities. One of the most important things is the preparation for that and basically all the different tools that we need to go through that. And if we look at a marathon runner or a mountain climber, this person really needs nutrition, the right nutrition and that right preparation. That means enough sleep, which I see many, many environmental activists often stepping back on when there are big conferences. And of course, I think also a support network that we should not keep in mind. I mean, mental health issues are really real within a youth environment activism. So I think as we're here today talking about these great topics of actually also bringing ourselves in and using ourselves to put biodiversity further, I think it's very important to talk about these aspects that that help us in our way of becoming a better activist, but also using all the strengths and forces, all the great capabilities and possibilities that we have. And that's only possible if you also make sure to stay healthy, have our friends, and unite. I think this is one of the best examples, right? To unite with other like-minded people all over the world to support each other. Also in the backlashes when there's a law passed that is again shrinking the ecosystems in our country, but it's also supporting each other whenever there are any negative backlashes. And further on, I think for the motivation as well, it's really important to have this personal character and the possibility to actually go forward together. And of course, I mean, we've heard it from Sister Santi, the strength of a bull is something that I really love that as a picture, because I think all of you that are here really realize how strong we have to be, how we have to push forward ourselves. And many of you obviously also get asked by people around you of how can we become better at what we do? What do we have to do to actually protect the environment and biodiversity? And are we still able to do A? Are we still able to do B? How do we have to change around our entire life? And I think those are the moments where we can use all our motivation to always take a tiny step further than what we do already today to, where it starts getting difficult, but where we can flourish and inspire other people. And that's, I think, what this event here is really teaching me today, how inspiring this event even started. So I'm really happy to hear more about that inspiration. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Wonderful experience that you shared with us. So we have to be united with others. Okay, thank you. So we're going to pass to our very next speaker. So now I would like to welcome Jyoti Mathur Philip. So welcome. And thank you for sharing with us.
Thank you so much for inviting us, the convention on the secretariat of the Convention on Biological Diversity. It is my pleasure to join you today to celebrate World Environment Day. This year, the celebrations are even more special than we would have ever expected. With COVID-19 pandemic, the world has discovered the importance of the linkages of biodiversity and human health and the health of the planet, and the urgent need to preserve nature to avoid similar pandemics in the future. It is also special because this year, and now also into next, we as an international community are working together to prepare a framework for biodiversity, a 30-year framework for biodiversity, which will guide us and our actions for a common vision, which is a 2050 vision of living in harmony with nature. What do we mean by living in harmony with nature by 2050? I think of it as a world where all living things coexist in a healthy and balanced manner, a world where the well-being of nature, including us humans, coexist in a healthy manner, and everything is ensured. It would mean that greenhouse gas emissions are under control and humans are consuming less than what the earth can regenerate. For people who depend on marine and coastal ecosystems for their livelihoods, it would mean that the smallest to the largest fish species is thriving, that the shores are no longer eroded or vulnerable to storms, that coral reefs are colorful and multiplying, filling the eyes and imagination of guests and visitors. For farmers, it would mean that the lands are fertile, the pollinators are healthy, the worms and microbes are well and alive and enriching our soils, turning its nutrients into plants. It would mean that their crop yields would be stable and sufficient to provide nutritious food for almost 10 billion people. For nomadic herders, it would mean that they could take their animals to restored oases where clean water is abundant, and they could sit underneath ancestral trees to enjoy some shade and coolness. For indigenous people, perhaps in the Arctic, it would mean that they can travel on snow and ice, share their territories with seals, whales, bears, and birds, and pass on traditional values and knowledge about Mother Earth to their children and to the world. Deforestation would be halted and forests would have been restored. Animals would no longer be driven outside of their natural habitat. They would no longer come near human populations and therefore spread the diseases from animals to humans And that would be reduced completely, almost completely. Many cures for human diseases would have been found in species of plants, animals, and microbes. People living in the cities would understand the carbon footprint of the products they consume, and they would be connected with their food sources. They would only consume products that are produced and harvested sustainably, and illegal trade of wildlife for food consumption would be halted. Let's not forget that the dazzling colors of flowers, corals, and butterflies would continue to provide inspiration for artists and designers. The enchanting songs of birds, whales, and wolves would inspire musicians and poets. The new and old varieties of herbs, algae, and plants would provide delicious raw materials for cooks and chefs. And the mystery of great mammals would continue to feed children's imagination. To reach this level of harmony by 2050, the greatest efforts will have to be made now between 2020 and 2030. We want to hear your ideas and your views, particularly you, the youth who will be living with the consequences of the decisions that we are making today. How can we accelerate action in the next 10 years in order to reach this 2050 vision? How can we make the future flourish for you and for all future generations? I really look forward to exchanging with you in this upcoming session, your views. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Jyoti, for your valuable intervention. So to live in harmony with nature, we have to make this effort while we are here, and you made this beautiful idea of the ideal world, the perfect world. Okay, so next to our, passing to our next speaker, we want to hear Martin Frick. So thank you for being with us. So welcome, Martin.
No, okay. Thank you very much for the invitation. Happy World Environment Day to everybody, and a special thanks to already to Teresa and Jyoti, because they have wonderfully set the scene for today. On biodiversity, two jobs before the current one, I was acting as the German ambassador for all of the UN organizations in Bonn. And so I learned my environment, and a couple of steps from the UN campus in Bonn is one of the most profiled museums for zoology, for animal diversity. And the director of this museum, a very kind man, gave me a private tour of this museum, which is really a privilege. It started in the early 20th century, and I will never forget the drawers after drawers after drawers that he showed to me with the most beautiful butterflies you can imagine. And with a sad expression on his face, said, extinct, extinct, doesn't exist anymore. So all this beauty is basically just there because it's somewhere conserved in a museum. It's already lost. That's the first thing I want to say. And I was very happy about what Jyoti just said, because people tend to monetize everything. Money is the big equalizer. It's what makes things comparable. But there are things that are incomparable. How do you describe a giraffe to a child that has never seen one? An elephant, a wild lion, all these sort of animals, which we are losing at an incredibly rapid scale. I was checking a little bit background numbers before speaking here. And I mean, I professionally know it's shocking, but it's even more shocking than I ever thought. If you look at mammals, as human beings are mammals, if you would weight them with the giant balance, the biomass of all mammals on Earth is more than 90% now. Humans and the animals we are basically eating or using for milk and eggs. Eggs certainly not. It's not mammals, but cows and pigs and humans are now, I think, to 95% the mammal biomass of this planet. obviously there's something going very, very wrong here. And that brings me to a second point. I always find it difficult to speak about one aspect of what I believe is really an interconnected environmental crisis. It's basically the question, how do we as humans live on that beautiful planet, which is ours, in a way that we can continue to live on this planet? Geologists have already coined this as the age of man, as the Anthropocene, in which the biggest impacting factor on nature is actually human beings. Now, there's an old saying that says, with great power comes great responsibility. And we are reminded in no uncertain terms how big this responsibility is. Because what we did to nature, particularly over the last 30 years, is coming back full circle on us. With climate change, we are getting to a situation where loss of lives and livelihood becomes our daily routines. We are constantly set for the hottest year, month, whatever. The impact on people is horrible. We are destroying habitat for animals worldwide, and we are paying a price for that. Pandemics such as Ebola or the avian flu or swine flu are all zoonotic diseases. And it's the biggest source of new diseases comes from the destruction of the natural habitat of many animals. Now, on COVID, we are still looking into where is that exactly coming from and how is that distributed and what role is our relationship with nature playing there. But already now, it is obvious that, for example, in Europe, as in the United States, hotspots of COVID infections are slaughterhouses, in which people also work under unspeakable conditions, leave alone the animal welfare aspect of it. So clearly, in terms of climate, in terms of health, in terms of pollution, saving biodiversity also means saving human lives and also saving, I would say, the dignity of our lives, which is very much defined also by the context in which we are allowed to live. And I leave it at that, and I'm very much looking forward to our discussion later on. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Very, very realistic picture you have given us, and the big responsibility that is in our backs to create, to make flourish a new future. Addition of what Martin and Yoti and Teresa has been sharing with us. So welcome, Sister Jenti.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Okay. It's an honor to be with all of you today, and I want to give you greetings for World Environment Day, which I think is maybe the most important subject of our times. I know that COVID-19 hits the headlines all the time. I know many other factors, the financial story, but yet I do think that when human beings begin to destroy their own home. Now, this is a very, very serious issue. We heard this beautiful vision of nature in harmony, and also we heard some of the scary stuff of the things that are going on. And what I would like to propose is a spiritual solution, because my own feeling is that there's something wrong with our understanding or awareness of life at the present moment, which has led us to create a situation where money becomes the great equalizer, as Martin said, or we would say money becomes the driving force behind everything. And it's a sad story, but it's reflected in many different ways, and especially in terms of biodiversity, where we haven't recognized the beauty, the goodness, and the sacredness of life. We've forgotten that life is actually sacred. We are here because we were given a life that is sacred. Nature, the earth, is sacred. And so I think it's very important to acknowledge this and respect this. And when we come back to that awareness of what is sacred in life, life itself is sacred, then perhaps we can have a different vision and a different attitude and begin to make a change in our behavior and our lifestyle so that we can put right things that have gone wrong. And yes, indeed, look forward to a future in which everything is in harmony and functions well together. A world in which each aspect is playing its own very sacred individual role. I mean, when I was little, I didn't realize how important bees were. And later on, when I started to study biology, zoology, yes, I could understand that. But today we're in a situation where, for the sake of almond trees, what we're finding is that in some places, I won't mention names at the moment, growing almonds is more important than the life of the pollinators. And of course, the almond trees are not going to exist if the pollinators don't exist. But at the moment, we are seeing that this is the crisis that's going on in certain parts of the world. So my own feeling is that trying to patch up little things here and there maybe works, maybe doesn't work. And certainly all the things that we've been trying in the 20th century have added to our problems. They haven't been able to solve our problems. And I think it's because we are again looking for answers outside. And I think we have to go in a different direction to find answers. And the direction I'm suggesting is to be able to go inwards, inside. And when I go inwards, then I realize that there is a sacred space within my own inner world in which I do have the wisdom to know what it is I need to do in terms of my behavior outside. I'd like to begin with respect, because I see that as being a very fundamental factor in our life. Parents often tell their children that, oh, you don't know what is respect. When I was a child, I was taught about respect and how to respect my elders. But I'm talking about respect in terms of, yes, human relations, that's absolutely vital, but also respect in terms of other forms of life, all the different species that this beautiful planet of ours is also home for. You know, when we were told that human beings are trustees, are stewards of the earth, that carries a responsibility. And that responsibility means that we are told we have to take care, we have to look after the other species, because we have the power and the possibility of annihilation of all the different species, including our own. But if we really have the respect to be able to see that, and the responsibility that we have to learn to respect all forms of life and all aspects of nature, then our relationship with other forms of life and nature changes very dramatically. One very important way that respect brings about a change is that there is non-violence. At the moment, I'm violent towards human beings, I'm violent towards nature, I'm violent towards other creatures, other forms of life. And Martin, I didn't realize that hotspots were actually the slaughterhouses in the cities. But yes, that makes a lot of sense. And of course, yes, the destruction of the environment means that we've actually created a huge, huge imbalance. And so we don't have a safe place at the moment for ourselves, never mind offering a place of safety to other creatures. And so I think that respect is important, but how do I develop respect? Where does it come from? So often we hear of people, and young people also, that people speak about insecurity and lack of self-confidence or lack of self-esteem. Well, all of these are parts of the same problem. Where I've forgotten my spiritual identity, now I have to come back to the awareness of my own inner identity. Then in that awareness of who I am, I recognize that I carry within myself peace and truth and love and joy and purity. All of this is within me. But I need to know who I am. And when I go inwards on that spiritual journey and I rediscover this truth about myself, then I can hold my head up high. I have inner dignity that no one can take away from me. And this is the value that I have for myself when I see the values that I hold within. And of course, the more I translate these values into my behavior, into my interaction with everyone around me, including other creatures, other beings, it means that my own self-respect is enhanced. It continues to develop and grow. And so starting inside, and spirituality teaches me that whatever are the problems outside, the answers are not outside. Einstein said that you can't solve the problems with the things that created the problems. So the thinking that created the problems is the same thinking that's trying to find the answers, and it's not working. But a different type of thinking, thinking on a spiritual perspective. And when I go inside and I touch those values within, my own self-respect is enhanced, and then I can look you straight in the eye and see you as my brother, my sister, as my equal, and we can ensure that we work together. Working together in cooperation is not possible if there's complexes of inferiority and superiority or racism, etc., etc. But when I see you as my brother or my sister, and I connect with you on that deeply spiritual level, then this is the foundation for being able to work together. And yes, it's not one individual, it's not one community, it's not one nation that can resolve the problems that have been created by humanity as a whole. It's all of us together, and all of us coming together with that one vision. One human family, one home, and this is our home. The planet that was visible to the NASA astronauts from outer space, they saw this beautiful blue pearl floating in the sea, this cosmos of darkness, and that was planet Earth. It was an image that changed our vision towards the world and towards each other. We share a world which is actually without any boundaries. Boundaries are being created artificially. But to come back to that awareness of one family and one world, and to be able to ensure that we create the right conditions for a flourishing future, I think respect is the underlying factor. And that, of course, leads to nonviolence. And if we have nonviolence and respect, then that can lead to cooperation. And so when we understand that the problem is bigger than all of us, that no individual or one nation can resolve it, and we decide to work together, then yes, we can work towards a better future for all, not just human beings, but also all creatures and nature itself. So that is the vision that I hold, and the determination of a Taurian is, we're going to get there, definitely. Thank you. Om Shanti. A greeting of peace to all my sisters and my brothers.
Great. Thank you, Sister Janti. Very valuable thoughts and seeds that you have given us. So to create this beautiful future, to create this beautiful world, we need to act on the basis of respect, and then everything will get so much better. So thank you so, so much. Okay, now we would like to have an interaction with two of our speakers. I would like to ask a question to Sister Genti and Teresa. The basis of these cheerings that we just had, does this flourishing approach resonate with your personal principles and values?
Absolutely. This vision is something that comes from my heart and comes from the principles and the values that I hold, because I see that seeing life as sacred is a foundation, so that then respect and nonviolence and cooperation can happen. But I also see that all of this is actually the qualities that are within every human being, not just within one individual, but every human soul has these qualities. And all we need to do is to just spend a little moment in silence and go deeper inside and connect with that which is within us and allow it to be expressed. And once we do this, then yes, that flourishing future is absolutely in our hands. And so I believe that these are the things we need to do to make it happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for these great inspiring words by you, Sister Shanti. I can only agree, although I can't say it in such nice words as you do. That's really impressive. I believe in the good in people, and by many people called it naive, I've so far not been let down, especially not in the surroundings of youth activists that are working towards this topic. And I really like working with people, and also experience that within our groups of youth advocates, if people feel ownership, if they feel safe in what they do, if they feel supported, and if they can basically develop their character in the work that they do, then they also flourish and do much really find their own way in youth activism, because I think everyone's activism is personal, right?
Yes, thank you, Teresa. So, okay, the second question for Sister Genti and Teresa is, how do you see it possible for the flourishing approach to become integrated in the field of biodiversity, especially for the younger generation?
I'd like Teresa to share first, since she is of the younger generation.
Yeah, I think it is actually crucial. And I mean, when it comes to developing respect, when it comes to developing a feeling for our surrounding, whether this is flora and fauna, whether this is other people that we work with, that we are in this journey of protecting biodiversity with together, then it is actually a really great opportunity to connect to biodiversity and to actually sit somewhere in nature and experience the surroundings. To have, and if it's for those who live in bigger cities, if it's just a plant in your room that you see growing every day, or whether it's being outside in most parts of the day, I think that is something that really, really inspires us. So I think for those that live in areas where they don't get to have a lot of contact, especially now with social media rising, with technology interaction of people, of children starting very, very early, I think it's important that we encourage that kind of connection to plants and to animals, so that children actually experience that, because that food is not simply on the table, but that this kind of our role in an ecosystem and how fragile ecosystems can be. And I think that's very inspiring, and also basically develops the ownership that we feel for our surrounding and our motivation to actually work as advocates and to conserve the biodiversity.
Thank you for sharing that. And what I'd like to say is that you are the future. It is the young people who hold the future in their hands. And I know that if a young person is motivated and inspired, then the extent to which they can do to bring about change is just infinite. It's unlimited. And so I would say to young people that, yes, because you are the future, let yourself hold that vision of the beauty of nature and the beauty of the future that is possible. And if you hold that vision of the flourishing future and want to take your generation to that, that would be an amazing achievement. Because in fact, who knows how long my life is still, but whatever it may be, I know that the vision that I started with when I was 19 was a future in which there was justice and truth and love and joy. And it hasn't happened yet, but the vision doesn't leave me and it continues to inspire me. But I think that I had more time, but I think that the younger generation today, Teresa and many of you on this event, you're very aware that time is not on your side because we're running out of time. And things have to move very, very fast. But I think that you mentioned social media, and I think that's a key. I think young people have been born into the digital age. And so for you to make a few clicks happen is second nature. For me to learn how to use a smartphone is an effort, but for you, it's second nature. And so using social media to the best possible advantage to inspire others to bring about a transformation within themselves. When we think about activism, we think about speeches and waving banners and demonstrations. I'd like to invite you to think about the activism that happens inside, activating my own inner awareness, so that there's a transformation in the vision that I have, so that I hold that beautiful, flourishing future in front of me. And I'm willing to give my energy, my time, my motivation, my passion to make such a world happen. And I think it will happen.
Thank you.
Thank you, both of you. Such a beautiful thought for us young people. And everyone that is listening to us, so we can connect biodiversity through our inner activism. And through that, when we can inspire from our own values, then we can go to social media and have a conscious activism. And I think that's the way we all can start changing our world. So thank you so much. A little question from the audience. So how can silence and reflection contribute in cleaning and making ecosystem healthy again?
Firstly, I think silence and reflection gives me an opportunity to do a massive clean out in here. And if my thoughts, my feelings, my emotions, my conscience, my personality is filled with that purity and goodness which it used to have, if I come back to that original state, then what I'm going to do outside will be a reflection of this, so that then what I'm doing out there is actually a big, big cleanup and a transformation in what's happening in the world around me. And so I think that in a very practical way, I'll be able to understand how to put right the damage that I've caused the planet if I have stillness and cleanliness and purity inside. But the second thing is that vibrations work. You've heard of the experiments with plants in which you can send good vibrations to plants and give your plants love and they'll flourish, literally flourish. And another person, they don't give it that same attention to their plant and they look at this poor little plant and say, well, how come this isn't growing? And I see that yours is growing so well. It was vibrations. One was fed the nourishment of loving vibrations and the other one was deprived. So our vibrations have an impact on the atmosphere, they have an impact on nature, they have an impact on animals. And so if every day we were to devote just 5 minutes, I'm not asking for 10, or maybe even 3 minutes, but maybe 5, just sending out your vibrations and thoughts of love and purity to the whole of this amazing planet, our home, those vibrations will begin to shift many different energies and we'll be able to come together. And I believe that once we reach a point of critical mass, then it's going to become the norm, because that's what happens with collective consciousness. Once we begin to think in the same way and reach a certain level, then the power of that becomes collective. Everybody begins to think in the same way. And yes, then we're all working with the same goal in our mind and in our actions and life. So I believe that silence and reflection is the way to be able to heal this planet of our home, and also to be able to clean it up so that it returns to its pristine beauty and state.
Thank you, Sister Jenti.
And I make a point that Teresa just made earlier, and I think it was a very honest and a very good point. The one about youth activists basically not sleeping, burning out, understanding how urgent the situation is, and really losing their energy with very best intentions. And it always reminds me in an aircraft when you get the security instructions, people tell you, before you help other people, put on your own oxygen mask. And that's a very true remark. And I think what Sister Jenti just said is basically a part of, forgive me for the strange word, but a part of personal hygiene, to get your energies together and to make sure that you as a human being are remaining operational, that you have your energy together, and that you also understand that you are part of a big group of committed people. It's not all on your shoulders alone. And I think that's wonderful. And this is why I appreciate participating here, because this perspective is really, really important. If you're low on energy, if you are burned out, you cannot help anyone. And that's for me a key takeaway from this webinar.
So it was really deep and useful, all of these we have just heard, to apply in our daily life. And we can use this to empower ourselves, and then we can empower nature. And that's very important. As Martin said, we can just improve our personal hygiene, as he said, and then we can help others. We would like to reflect on how we can move from negativity, from violence, to an uplifting and constructive approach. And that's, I think, we got from the experience of Martin, of Jyoti, of Teresa, of Sister Jenti, and construct together a flourishing future. Now let's think of how can we apply this to our work, our daily life? How can we implement this to a new transformation?
For my vision of flourishing future, including all forms of life, what is it that stood out most for me from all that I have heard so far? 2, why is this relevant to me? Can I identify principles and values for a new approach in working towards a flourishing future? Now, how can I use this new flourishing approach, principles and values, practically in my area of work? What is my roadmap towards a flourishing future?
We had a very nice conversation. It was very nice to have a one-on-one conversation with somebody from another part of the world, even though I thought that she was from my part of the world, but we are from the same world. So that's what was very good. What we did, what is it that stood out for us? Some of the things that stood out for us was that there is a recognition that our relationship with nature is broken. and that we recognize that nature can provide a lot of support to us. It can provide spirituality to us. It can provide alignment to us. But in the last 30 to 40 years, we have our relationship with nature has changed drastically, and that has changed our approach and our and maybe part of the negativity and all of that comes through this broken relationship with nature. What we do recognize is that we have to change and move forward and be different in our approach to nature, and this is where youth come in, because youth are our future. They have the tools, the solutions. They can innovate, they can change, and they can move us forward to a better future than what we are leaving behind for them or where we have got them. And we recognize that, you know, in the next 10 years, we have to make changes. You know that in the conscience of the world, now we have for COVID-19 that we need to flatten the curve. It's the same thing for biodiversity loss and greenhouse gas emissions. I think Martin might speak about that. And so we have to flatten the curve to 2030 if we want to get to reach a vision of living in harmony with nature by 2050. To do that, we have to reduce waste. We have to reuse. These are none of this is new. We've been saying it for 30, 40 years. But we need to really start implementing these as humanity. We have to reduce waste. We have to reduce consumption. We have to have new production ways of producing, maybe reuse material that has already been used so that we don't continue to take from nature, but rather reuse what we've already taken from her. We have to move to a new future. We need to, and again, youth can do this. You have all the answers. You are our future. So maybe, you know, so this is the time for you to mobilize. You are, from what I understand, I think under 35 is more than what are over 35. So it's a huge, huge group that can mobilize and make change happen. And finally, we talked about it at a macro level. We talked about the economic recovery programs that are being approved by all governments now for COVID recovery, both at an individual level, at a level of big companies and multinational organizations, and also for infrastructure. And you can demand, you as youth can demand that these include building back better to ensure that, biodiversity loss, greenhouse gas, nature, all of this is respected in the future program, projects and programs that governments undertake. Would you like to add anything, Devendri?
Yes, thanks, Jyoti. Just to add that our discussion about things on a macro level and the economic recovery program actually came from something we were chatting about earlier in our discussion about how the pandemic and the lockdown and the way the world has just suddenly changed has actually given us the opportunity to create a new normal. And so my question to Jyoti was, how do you see this new normal being something that can be deeply established in this period of transition so that when the pandemic is over, we don't revert to the old ways that used to actually destroy biodiversity? And that was when Jyoti was informing me of all of these macro projects, you know, and shared her idea of how this is the ideal time for young people to mobilize and to make those demands. Because in the economic recovery programs that are happening around the world, there's margin for influence at this point in time. so that biodiversity can also be incorporated and encompassed in the economic recovery program. Thank you.
Yeah, we were discussing about the first question, and what emerged from our discussion was two specific points. The first is to what we keep from that from the discussion was to carry out a pure vision of a flourishing future, so that we have really an aim for ourselves and to focus on actions that are relevant, considering that that vision and considering that it makes sense for ourselves. And we turned the discussion on that aspect of what makes sense actually in our life. It can be it at work, and especially it was the focus at work. And both of us with Catherine, we were discussing on that. And it is like really so huge for us as young adults to be aligned and to choose to make choice of activities of work that provide us that energy, that focusing, and how to use that energy to be rejuvenated and to have an impact for ourselves and outside. And both of us with Catherine, it was just amazing. We both had time during the lockdown to be really connected to nature and to spend some time, good quality time in nature, and how it had a really good impact to provide us energy. And the question we had together was, how can we take it in our daily life so that we could make it more energetic, as we were spoken, and the guests were spoken about that, how to make it very energetic. So, yeah, that's the point we share and we carry out with that.
Yes, thank you so much. So I think from breakup groups, we have just heard some valuable things. Between them, just we need to create this new normal. From creativity to create projects for students, for young people to emerge these beautiful values that can change the world. So thank you so much for your contribution. And we are going to pass now to to another section of questions to Jyoti and Martin. So we would like to ask you, taking this into account, all of these from the beginning, how do you envisage the flourishing approach being used to make a practical contribution to the various projects and initiatives related to biodiversity?
Really impressive what I just heard coming back from the different groups. Try to answer to your question by also responding to what I have heard. I think there's this element of the COVID-19 crisis that really was for many people a moment for reflection, a moment to pause in a very, very hectic daily life that people normally have, and also to be alone in nature, which we basically as modern people do very, very rarely. And I think there's a growing sense worldwide of people saying we cannot go back to business as usual, because business as usual is not working. I very much appreciated Jyoti's comment about flattening the emissions curve. And, you know, while I was sitting here, there was a message popping up that we are again at record levels of CO2 emissions, despite the fact that the COVID crisis really locked billions of people down. What I find really empowering and really worthwhile reflecting on is to actually take a step back and think about what kind of life would we like to have, and not take everything that we see around us as a given. Our life is certainly so substantially different from a life 100 years ago. And I don't mean that positive or negative, you know. we have a bit of both. Of course, we got a big level of destruction of nature, but on the other hand, how brilliant is that, that we are all sitting in our living room somewhere in the world, connecting with each other and speak to each other in real time. Despite being more than 7 billion people, we've never been closer to each other. And I think if we can encourage ourselves to collectively think about, you know, what we or plus 20 called the future we want, then we will also be able to create this future we want. But for that, we first have to understand that it really is in our hands, that very little things are a given, and that, as the COVID crisis has showed us, things can turn around basically overnight. But this is also a big power, and I think that's a power we should be using, and that will translate into so many good projects. And, you know, to conclude, working with and for biodiversity is really simple. You know, it goes down to composting your leftovers from meals. It goes down to turning a little garden, if you have a little garden, from a green desert that's just a manicured lawn to a place in which bees and species can flourish, and just create a little bit more of a connection between ourselves as beings and our surroundings, because we cannot live without this support system on our wonderful blue marble. And with that, I hand back to you, Maria.
Thank you, Martin. Jyoti?
So, as I said already, we are in the middle of developing our 30-year global biodiversity framework, which we will, although governments are negotiating, it will be up to you to implement, because we will be gone from the workplace, at least, maybe not from the planet, but at least from the workplace, we will be gone in the next 30 years. So it would be very good if you could use your voices with your governments, with your focal points, biodiversity focal points, which you can find the names of on our website, to, you know, try and influence what you want to see in the biodiversity framework. This is the time to do it. So we would be, so I think you can get in touch as chapters in different cities and different countries with the focal points, and try to get your viewpoint across. You can also, you know, organize nature campaigns. You can organize, quizzes, blitz everywhere to increase the awareness of nature and awareness of biodiversity in this time. Our conference of the parties, which was supposed to negotiate this this framework, was supposed to take place in October, but now it is likely to take part in the second half of next year. And so you have a whole year. There's a whole year for you to influence the decision makers on what you want. And I think that would be a very, very good way for you to include flourishing approaches in the framework. Thank you.
I think we all been inspired by Jyoti, by Martin, by Sister Genti, Teresa. And we can now move ahead, go forward with this new, or with this refreshed mind to build together a new future, taking action, taking conscious action to build this beautiful future. And we all have the seeds to do that. Okay, now we would like to invite Sister Genti to conduct and to share a moment of meditation, so we all can take a moment to think and to reflect on what we just have heard from our speakers. So please, Sister Genti.
Just take a moment to go on a journey inside, going inwards, and experiencing the light within. I am that being within, a being of light. And in this awareness, my thoughts can travel to a future that's very beautiful. A future that's filled with harmony. Humans in harmony with themselves. Humans in harmony with each other. Harmony amongst all the myriad forms of life that exist on our planet. Harmony with all the elements, the earth, the water, the fire, the sky, the ether. A world of total harmony, everything in perfect balance, a world of justice, of truth, of joy, of beauty and love. Keeping this vision of the future, I ask myself, what must I do today? And from deep within, the answer comes, I must be the change that I would like to see happen in the world. And so I am reminded, I need to tap into truth within my own being and express that truth in my life. I have to find that peace within. It will allow me to be at peace with myself and everyone and everything that is part of this huge tapestry of beauty on this planet. Let me find that love within myself that can then be expressed and hold everything inclusively, including every color, every race, every being, every form of life, every aspect of nature. And as I hold that future vision, I now see the steps that I need to take in my life to make that future vision become a reality. Om Shanti. Thank you.